The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Way early this morning, Brad Higdon shared a major spoiler alert from everyone's favorite hit show, sad emojis to express his feelings about the plot twist, and a playlist he made to drown out his sorrows? Dude, oversharing alert. Brad, Geico has something worth sharing with those who haven't befriended you. Like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance at geico.com. So stop moping about the post-apocalyptic world and start saving in the real world. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Play that funky music, Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, boy, kicking it with Vanilla Ice today on Talk is Jericho. You know what that means. We're going to dig deep into some 90s pop culture, see what I remember, see what he remembers, see what we both remember. I'm going to talk about Ice's TV series, The Vanilla Ice Project. The season finale airs Saturday night at 9 p.m. on the DIY Network. That was the fifth season of the VIP. He flips houses. Actually, he flips mansions, and you should see what he does to them. We did this interview right in the middle of one of his brand new flipped houses. He comes in, he renovates them, he sells them, and these houses are the Mac Daddy, yo, all the way to the top with Vanilla Ice today. Plus, we're going to remember a great, great man in the wrestling business and a very cool guy in general, Dusty Rhodes. He passed away last week. The sadness is over. It's time to remember the fun times about this great, great, legendary performer. All of this and so much more. I had to be sharp. I had to be ready. I had to be able to think back to remember all the things about Dusty and all the things about the 90s. So I took some Koios today. My brain is running at peak performance, clear-headed, feeling sharp, focused. That's what Koios does, all right? It's a brain supplement that helps boost brain function. And the thing is, people say, is Koios real? I'm sick of drinking coffee all the time, and I want to get off the coffee, off the 5-hour energy. I'm telling you, Koios really works, all right? Increases motivation, enhances mental clarity, improves your memory recall, gives you that energy boost that you need that caffeine would do, except for this, it's 10 times more effective than caffeine and coffee, 10 times healthier as well, because it uses earth-grown ingredients that target the brain function. And over the long term, Koios builds the brain like a muscle. The Koios team spent years researching, testing, developing this formula. It's a combination of 11 different ingredients. Everybody they tested on it showed great results, including me, including Y2J. They tested everyone, world-class athletes, actors, writers, teachers, students, rock and roll singers, six-time WWE champions. It really works. Koios is a great supplemento, no matter your age or occupation. Now listen, I know you guys lead busy lives, so do I. Never seems to be enough time to get that great sleep or the exercicio that you need or the eating that you need, the right eating. You're always running from one thing to the next. You're stressed out. Well, now you can do something about that. You can feed your brain, be a superstar at the office, be a superstar with your family, be a superstar in the boudoir, if you know what I'm saying. Give yourself that edge with Koios. Try it now. Unleash your mental titan. Here's how to remember it. Koios was the titan of mental intelligence. Titans are Greek gods. So order Koios today and get this. Use my promo code. And how much you get off your order? 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. That's right. 25% off your order. Just go to mentaltitan.com. Use my promo code Jericho. That's mentaltitan.com, and promo code is Jericho to get 5, 10, 15, 20, 25% off your entire order. You're gonna love Koios once you try it. Become a mental titan yourself. Go to mentaltitan.com. Use my promo code Jericho. That's mentaltitan.com. 25% off. Go check it out. Get sharp. Get smarter. Get better. Get Koios.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's time to stop, collaborate, and listen, because Jericho's back with my brand new invention. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. That's right. Vanilla Ice is in the Talk is Jericho house today. It's Throwback Wednesday, and we're definitely going to talk about the hair, the baggy pants, the running man. Stop, collaborate, and listen. Ice is back with his brand new invention. Plus, you're going to hear about his TV show, The Vanilla Ice Project. Season 5 finale airs Saturday night at 9 p.m. on the DIY Network. It's a huge, huge hit. Ice buys houses, renovates them, and flips them. And wait until you see and hear what he does. We did this interview in the middle of one of his renovated houses, and it was a palace, man. It was up to date. Unbelievable palace, had an elevator in it and top of the line, everything else. It was very, very cool stuff. Ice is a great guy. I've been trying to get him for about 8 months because I met him just briefly on the set of, what was it called? That show that was on G4 Network. And it was called Attack of the Show. Man, that was a big brain freeze. Anyways, I ran into Ice at the Attack of the Show, and we exchanged numbers, I think, or followed each other on Twitter or whatever, and I just hit him up a while back. Do you want to do this show? And we said, we'll try and figure out the right time. I was down in Boca Raton. I took about a 45-minute ride, met Ice at one of his houses, the one that he's renovating right now. The season finale is going to be on the DIY Network on Saturday night, 9 p.m. Super excited to talk to Ice about all things rap music and early 90s and the ups and downs of show business and, of course, his amazing, amazing show. How he got the cojones and the talents to renovate houses. He's a cool guy, great guy. I'm excited to hear what he has to say. Also excited to give some of my memories about Dusty Rhodes, a very cool guy that I didn't have a lot of interactions with, but I had enough to where he definitely rubbed off on me in a positive way. Had a real mutual respect with Dusty. Dusty passed away a few days ago, I guess last week at some point in time. And it's one of those things where now you hear the stories that maybe Dusty knew that there was something wrong with him, but didn't want to say anything. And there's been a few people that I've talked to who said that they've spoken to Dust over the last few weeks, and maybe he was kind of in a roundabout way saying goodbye. But my experience with Dusty Rhodes, like growing up in Canada, I never really saw a lot of him. You know, you would just see what you would see on the, we call them the Apter magazines, the Pro Wrestling Illustrated and those type of things. So I never got to see a lot of Dusty Rhodes because he was in the NWA or in the later years, WCW. We never got a lot of that. It was all AWA in Winnipeg and then, of course, WWE now. So when I first started seeing Dusty Rhodes is when he came into the WWF as the working man, the American dream, Dusty Rhodes. And they brought him in, you know, he was fixing toilets and, you know, he was the son of a plumber. And he was the American dream, just a common man. And I really think in retrospect, because they brought him in and he was wearing like these giant yellow polka dots on this bodysuit, and they put him with Sapphire, who's just kind of like this middle-aged African-American lady, not hot at all. And I think the idea was he was just like, you know, the man of the people. Most of the people in those days and most of the people now look more like Dusty Rhodes than they look like John Cena or Hulk Hogan or whatever it may be, or Chris Jericho. I'll throw myself in there. So I think that's why Dusty was able to really click. And I also believe, especially knowing the way that the wrestling business was back in the 80s, that Vince McMahon probably heard so much about this Dusty Rhodes and how great of a babyface he was and how awesome of a performer he was. He probably said, listen, he's such a great babyface. He can get over anywhere, any shape, anyhow. Okay, put him in a polka dot outfit and stick him out there and have him dance. Let's see how much he gets over. And bingo, they put him in a polka dot outfit and he goes out there and dances. And guess what? Dude was over like a mofo. That's when I started really seeing Dusty Rhodes a lot. And I liked him. You know, obviously I was always into the more Canadian style, Calgary style wrestling. And I loved Dynamite Kid and Owen Hart and Chris Benoit and Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty and Savage and Steamboat and those type of guys. But there was something about Dusty Rhodes that I liked because he was entertaining. He was fun to watch. Always did good promos. Had a weird voice. Hey, baby, this is American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. To a point where like everybody who comes on this show that's gone through the WWE system, I get them to do a Dusty Rhodes imitation. I could probably put together a great montage of some of the best Dusty Rhodes imitations on this show. I think still PJ Black is still the worst imitation of Dusty Rhodes ever. And I think, was it Ryback that was good? Or maybe it was Sami Zayn? I'm not sure. Somebody did a really good Dusty Rhodes. But he had a very distinct voice, much like, you know, Stu Hart or Vince McMahon or, you know, one of those guys that anybody can imitate. Can he talk to my lady? How you doing, baby? American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Of course, that's the worst imitation ever. I'm so bad at imitations. But, yeah, so I never really had a lot of interaction with Dusty when I came into WCW in 96, he was a commentator. So I never really talked too much. He would always talk nice about me and commentating, but whatever. And then he went away for a bit, and they brought him back. And I, right before I left WCW, I got the proverbial, the old saying was, we're going to put a rocket on your ass, you know, we're going to and watch you just shoot to the stars. And Dusty Rhodes actually told me that when I was in WCW, you know, because he had taken over the book. And now that I'm here, baby, we're gonna put the rocket up your ass, and shoot you to the stars. he's making me laugh. So anyways, I never really did get that rocket up my ass. Maybe I got it up my ass. I never got it strapped to my ass. But so fast forward a few years, and then I finally, you know, make my fame and fortune in the WWE. And I started seeing Dusty Rhodes a lot when he started working at the Performance Center. At first it was FCW, and then it was NXT, of course. And I always really got along with him. There was a little spark in his eye whenever he would talk to me and whenever I talked to each other. And I found out in retrospect from someone very close to Dusty, and I'm not going to say who because that's between us, but he said, you know, I know for a fact that Dusty really respected the shit out of you, and always wondered why, you know, why WCW didn't do more with you, and why WWE didn't do more with you up until a certain point, you know. But he really, really respected you and thought you were great, and blah blah blah. So a very cool story to hear, especially with Dusty. But a couple stories from Dusty. I went to the Hall of Fame the year that Ted DiBiase was inducted, and the Hall of Fame has a bad habit of like doing this like, I don't know, it's just kind of a typical, anytime somebody comes up on stage, you go give them a standing ovation. You know what I mean? It's just the standard reaction. So, you know, listen, I don't mind when, you know, Hulk Hogan comes up on stage, or, you know, whatever, Triple H or Howard Finkel or Arnold Schwarzenegger, anybody that I really, really respect. I mean, I'll give a standing ovation. It's kind of the idea when you're there. But when Ted DiBiase was inducted, his sons, Ted Jr. and Brent DiBiase, inducted him. And I happened to be sitting right next to Cody Rhodes and Dusty Rhodes. And I said to Dusty, I said, man, I'm not giving a standing ovation to Brent DiBiase. There's no way. Like, I'll give a standing ovation to, you know, Greg the Hammer Valentine. Whatever. I'll do it. Standing ovation for, you know, Wendy Richter. Okay. But I'm not giving a standing ovation to Brent DiBiase. And Dream's like, you know, he's like, I can't believe it, baby. What are we going to do? So finally, Brent DiBiase comes up. And first, I think it was Ted DiBiase Jr. He came up, everyone gave him a standing ovation. I'm like, all right, I've worked Ted, you know, whatever. I'll give him a standing ovation. Then Brent DiBiase comes up there. And of course, people start giving him a standing ovation. I'm looking at Dream. And him and I are the only two guys that aren't standing up, you know. And kind of look like jerks. And Dusty finally stands up and starts giving the kid, you know, standing ovation. And I was like, Dusty, I'm not giving Brent DiBiase a standing ovation. And he goes, just do it, kid. Just do it. Hell, Dusty Rhodes told me to stand up and give the kid a standing ovation. I got up and gave him a standing ovation. What are you going to do? And I would always see him, I was like, damn it, Dream. You should have, you told me. I'm bad. So then another time we were talking, and I mentioned to him my theory that, you know, Vince was just testing. Like, hey, you think you're a good baby face? He's a good baby face? All right, let's see how good of a baby face he is. Stick him in a polka dot outfit and see how he gets over. And I said to him, man, I mean, you were such a great baby face, Dust, that, you know, you got over despite the fact that you were a giant dancing polka dot. And he goes, I had to feed my kids, baby. And plus, I like polka dots. It's just like, super funny guy and just really smart to the business. Like I said, I never got to sit underneath the Dusty Rhodes learning tree, because in WCW, it wasn't like that. No one was really helping out. And I'm not sure he was there too long anyways when I was there. And then, of course, by the time I saw him again, I'd already, you know, been a multi-time world champion, although I'm sure there's 10,000 million things that Dusty Rhodes could have taught me that I never got the chance to learn from him. But he was great, man. I remember one time when I think he inducted the Four Horsemen into the Hall of Fame, and he came up there and he's like, this is how he did his speech. He's like, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, there were four. Sammy Davis, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, there were four. It's like, I remember sitting by Cody and it's like, this is the best speech ever, but he's only saying three. What happened to poor Ringo? And what happened to poor, was it Peter Lawford? Who was the fourth guy in the Rat Pack? I think it's Peter Lawford. Was there? Maybe it was Joey Bishop. Whatever. So one of those two guys, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison. There were four. So anyways, man. Great guy, and like I said, that's just my personal experiences with Dusty Rhodes. But I mean, go back and watch anything on the network or any of his matches, and you'll see. I mean, the guy was just perfect, amazing, such a good performer, and really, really, really got over because he had the connection with the audience, and that's something that I harp upon that to all the students, all the kids, and Tough Enough. That are there now, the top 13, you guys got to make a connection with the audience. That's how you make it in wrestling. And Dusty had that connection. In a world where it was all about how much muscle you had, he didn't have any muscle, but he had that connection, and he had that charisma, and he had that personality. And that's what wrestling is all about. That's what show business is all about. So, and also just as a brain, you know, he's such a smart booker. And I mean, I'm sure there's other podcasts or websites you can read that can delve into that. But I just want to talk about the guy that I knew who had a great sense of humor and always treated me with nothing but respect. And I got nothing but respect right back at him. So thank you so much, Dusty Rhodes, for the times, the brief times that I got to spend with you. And thanks for all you did for the business that I love and that so many others love. And when you talk about top stars, I don't know if there's too many bigger ones than Dusty Rhodes. You know, there might be, you know, you got Hogan and Flair and Austin and Rock and, you know, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. But I mean, Dusty Rhodes has got to be up there with those guys for sure. So God bless you, Dusty Rhodes. And we'll see you on the other side, man. And I'm glad that I got a chance to talk to you a little bit and get to know you a little bit. And your sons are great guys too, man. Dustin's a great guy. Cody as well. So, yeah, man. So a little bit sad, but if you're looking for something to smile about, I got Vanilla Ice coming up. He's talking about his Cavariccis. He's got to talk about his hair gel. I asked him how he got his hair to stand up back in the day. He's talking about rapping. He's talking about writing Ice Ice Baby. He's talking about all the stuff that he went through fighting Queen in court about the copyright. Dun, 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 dun. And, of course, renovating and flipping houses. It's a real interesting conversation. And it's a little bit of a long one to get to his house. It took me 45 minutes to get to that house. So I loaded up on my Nature Box snacks, and I made sure I was ready to take it on. I love Nature Box. You know I'm a big fan of the coconut cashews. I always eat them first. I also like the sweet and salty nut mix. Get your mind out of the gutter. I'm going to tear that open, that bag, dig into it. It's got peanuts, cashews, almonds, a little honey mixed in. That'll give me what I need to take on. Stop. Collaborate and listen. Ice is back with his brand new invention. Ice, ice, baby. Dun, gong, dong, chung, good, dong, gum. Ice, ice, baby. But Nature Box got more than just nuts. They got hundreds of snacks to choose from. All delicious, guilt-free snacking options. Nature Box has gluten-free snacks, vegan snacks, low-fat snacks, no sugar-added snacks, no artificial flavor snacks, no color snacks, no hot fructose corn syrup snacks. They got dried fruit, tons of granola options. I mean, I got so much stuff that I can have. I saw someone actually on the plane recently sitting across the aisle from me eating the chocolate hazelnut granola. I told him, man, that is some good stuff in the Nature Box family. Perfect snacks for the carry-on bag. You know that's what I do. I toss them in. Always got the healthier snaction option with me. The healthier snaction option. All right, you got to try Nature Box for yourself. I'm telling you. I'm going to hook you up with some free Nature Box snacks. I said free. I mean free. All you got to do is go to naturebox.com/Jericho. You get their most popular snacks delivered right to your front door for free if you live in the United States. And after you get that free box, hit me up on the Twitter at TalkIsJericho. Let me know your favorite flavors, your favorite styles, your favorite snacks. Once again, get your free snacks by going to naturebox.com/Jericho right here, right now. That's naturebox.com/Jericho. Go do it right now.
You know, when people start having public conversations with the psychotic voices in their own heads, well, you either get them a straitjacket or a podcast. For Phil Hendry, we chose podcast.
Hi, this is Phil Hendry.
Which seems to be the right decision, because since The World of Phil Hendry debuted at Podcast One, his audience has doubled. Or was that the number of weird characters in his head?
Well, I hope you're not referring to me.
Well, you better not be referring to me.
Download a new episode of The World of Phil Hendry every friggin' day.
I thought it would be interesting.
Right here at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Ice Ice Baby's in full effect. Yep, yep.
Talk is Jericho.
All right. So we're here at the site of the Vanilla Ice Project. This is season 5, which is the house that you basically, you have to explain, I guess, this is a beautiful house.
Yeah.
And you've renovated it, but was it a dump before, or what exactly did you do to it? Like, what's the...
A dump is, that's actually putting it lightly. There was over 300 trees in this yard. You couldn't even see, and it's a beautiful lot here on the intercoastal and the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And you couldn't see the water from any room anywhere in the back.
You're kidding
300 trees. It looked like the Sherwood Forest, and there were invasive trees. They were ugly, like weeds.
Right.
Overgrown. In the front was the same thing. You couldn't see the road. You couldn't see anything, and... It took us a month and a half just to clear all the trees out. Once we cleared the trees out, we tore down every single wall here. We added on and put all the jewelry to it, so to speak.
So you're saying there was a house here, but it was just totally covered in foliage, basically.
It had been neglected. I mean, the house was built in 2000.
Okay.
It was a physician that lived here, and it wasn't a foreclosure or a short sale. His wife was sick. So he was in his 80s. And just, he admitted, he goes, you know, I let the place go. I couldn't take care of it. I've been having to take care of my wife. And I felt sorry. He's a really sweet guy, you know. And he goes, it's just too much for me to handle at my age right now. And it was funny because as soon as I bought the house from him, he was so happy, you know. I feel bad because his wife died during the process. But she was on hospice for 6 years, so she was kind of incoherent for the past year and a half. Mm-hmm. And he had been taking care of her, but... He was like, yeah, I'm not going to buy another house. I'm not going to do anything. And he shows me this van, and he opens the door, and there was a mattress in the back. He goes, this is me. I'm going to hit America. I go, where are you going? He goes, that way. He just pointed. He goes, I don't have any destination. I don't care. He goes, I'm just heading out into America. It was kind of a cute story, you know, mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, he'd done everything he needed to do, and he was just ready to go live it up, I guess, and not have any responsibility and made me think about when I retire, you know.
Right, where
am I going to go? What am I going to do?
So you start the show's been going, like you said, for 5 seasons. And so how do you find houses like this to renovate? Because obviously, so you see a place like this, and in your mind's eye, you know I can turn it into this, which is we're looking at the intercoastal. There's a beautiful pool outside. This room looks like a theater room. How are you finding the houses to fix up?
There's many different ways. I have a small, efficient team, and I've been doing this for 23 years, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I went to design school about 18 years ago. A lot of people don't know that. I didn't tell my friends back then because it was a little friendly. But I loved it. I caught the bug, and it's a lot of fun. It's like art. You transform these homes. So I come in, and I'll marinate for a long time. And it's a custom home, so a lot of the ideas actually evolve along the way. Once I clear the dust and the rubble and knock down a few walls, some other ideas will come to me and whatnot. But, you know, you got to be strict. You got to know your color palettes. You got to know how to make it warm. You got to know your demographics. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, and there's a few that can go right. So you got to make sure that you stay on the right path. And, you know, it's amazing, but in the end, you know, they come out great. And the greatest reward is when I see a family in here. They come in here and they buy the house and they appreciate all the hard work that we did, that you know, to put it together and make it happen. So it's rewarding, but you kind of need to be built for this stuff. It's not easy. You know, there's no B team that comes in after I stop filming.
Right.
And they finish the job. Okay, we've done our filming part. Now you can finish the job.
Yeah, get the real guys in here.
We grind it out, man. 6.5 long months, blood, sweat, tears, and even some teeth. So it's a brutal thing, you know. I have calluses all over my hands and stuff, and you know, I try to keep clean and soft for my wife and my kids and stuff, you know. But it gets a little burly through the crunch time, you know, in the middle of a project. But
yeah. You said that you've been, so you started doing this. You said 23 years ago.
Yep.
That would be after you became big with Ice Ice Baby then.
Right.
So this is something that you got into after you'd already made it as a rapper.
I did Ice Ice Baby when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
Went around the planet, sold 160 million records.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know the story there. And just, you know, I didn't plan this. I mean, it sounds like I planned it, but I never in a million years would have expected I'd be doing real estate or doing any kind of, you know, design or anything like this. What happened is I bought a few homes. You know, I'm sure you've seen this story through some wrestlers and different things. You know, you think you're going to be in L.A. And then you're going to have a place in Miami, a place maybe in Utah for snowboarding, or maybe in England or so, you know, and you can only be one place at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, I bought all these homes and I never saw them. And I go, oh my God, you know, 3 years went by. I went on tour for 3 years. I never saw any of these homes. And I came back and I was like, oh my God, I got all these homes. I'm paying all these taxes in November, you know, when tax time comes around. I'm like, young and dumb. I instantly thought I was stupid. And I had lost millions of dollars, I thought, you know. And I go, well, let's sell them. Let's sell all these homes, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to sell them for a loss. And this was back when the housing market was great.
Right.
And I ended up making millions. I said, what? Come on. I didn't even see these houses. They had cobwebs in them. Literally, they were a piece of paper in a filing cabinet. I really never saw them.
You were just buying them and flipping them.
I didn't even think to flip them. I bought them thinking I'm going to go live in them for a while. And since I never lived in them, I thought, and they had set for 3 years, that the cobwebs and, you know, everything had taken over and I was going to lose money. I ended up making millions and I said, oh my God, let's go buy some more, you know? So I went and bought some more, and at that point, it was no design, really. It was just paint and carpet. You just flip them, you know. You just buy it and sell it, because that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's evolved, and I've gotten more deep into the game and started designing and, you know, getting into, you know, really customizing these homes.
Because that's how, like, you know, like Donald Trump made his first fortune off of basically doing that, buying homes and selling them.
Yeah, he's one of my heroes, man.
From that, but then, like you said, like, 'cause I tried to do that in about 2005, and then like 6 months later, the whole market crashed.
Oh yeah,
and I got stuck with this house. I ended up losing some big money from it because I could never make back what I paid for it just because of the way the market crashed out.
You gotta take the good with the bad, and I've got a few of those myself. It's not always a pleasure cruise. You have to be able to weather the storm.
Right.
I've got a few of those where, you know, right when it hit hard and it hit quick. Because I have a home building company where it's like spec homes, and I bought a lot of land, you know, because I'm developing each parcel of land with a home, which usually takes me 12 months for a return on my money, because you have to get permits, you have to build a home, right? You have to do the closing on the land, then you have to go and then you build the home, and by the time you finish building an entire home from ground up, it's a year, and then you got to sell it, so it could be a year and a half before you get a return on your money, and you've shelled out all this money. And during that process, if the housing market crunched and your value of what you've built and paid and everything has dropped, you're just going to lose your ass.
Right.
So you learn a few of those, and you learn how to adjust. Now, I sell a real estate course online because I've really learned how to adjust.
Because you became a real estate salesman, too, like a real estate, what do you call it?
Yeah.
Real estate.
I don't know what you call
guy.
It. An investor.
Okay.
And I follow like Donald Trump. And one of my favorite, you know, heroes is Warren Buffett. He says, listen, he goes, you got to be able to weather the storm. He bought the train system when it was losing like $1 billion a month. And everybody thought he was nuts and he'd finally lost it. You know, one of the greatest investors of our time ever. And Warren Buffett says, listen, it's simple math for me, guys. If the population is growing, people need goods. Eventually, it'll catch up to itself. And now, after I think 10 years, it's already turned a profit, and now he's a genius again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's true, because the population is growing. When you and I were born 29 years ago,
that's right, yeah.
we the population was half of the world population that it is right now. There's 7 billion people here. I think there was like 3 or 4, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how much population is growing. So he's betting on those numbers. And it's true what he says, because now we're almost at 400 million in America. And in America, when we were, you know, kids, even Florida, it had 2 million. Now we're at 22 million. Mm. It's amazing. You know, the population is growing, and especially Florida. It's an easy sell. You know, it's a sunshine state. People come here. It's the sixth borough from New York. You know, people come here.
That's true, yeah.
And, it, you know, you're close to the Keys. You're close to everything, and you got beautiful weather all the time. So it's an easy sell. And Warren says, you know, the people are coming and just weather the storm. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. And I let my properties marinate. I still own a lot of land that I'm not even thinking about. So I reframed my thinking about that. And I learned how to buy not just foreclosures and short sales. Everybody knows that. That's good luck getting those. They're hard to get. You know, the truth behind that is that there's no staff at a bank even answering a phone call to get rid of those properties because the bank is covered by Obama law and they don't need it. Their insurance covers their loss and they're exempt from paying any taxes. So by doing that, they just let their properties, they don't even need a staff to answer a phone call because they're not in that big of a hurry to sell it. Even though you see this beautiful house set in 3, 4, 5 years down the street and it's an eyesore, it's got weeds coming out of it, the pool is black, we've all seen them, and it's a foreclosure. Nobody's really in a quick hurry to sell them.
Right.
So the way you get the homes is, the way I get most of mine is tax liens. And that's a lot of red tape. Most people are deterred by it because to get through that red tape is going to cost you a lot of money.
You're talking about people who lose their homes because they can't pay their taxes, basically? They
put
a lien on
the
houses?
When you're not paying your mortgage, you're not going to be paying your taxes either, or your insurance or anything. Mm-hmm. And there's a process that's going to take over. And the one that will get the first right of refusal to that will be the first mortgage holder, which will get the lien against the property, which they're going to need to get paid. HOA actually doesn't get to go back 5, 6, 7 years. They only get 1 year now. Obama passed some good laws to help out, you know, a lot of things. And I've adjusted to those laws, and it worked out amazing for an investor like me. So now, instead of waiting a whole year to get my return on my money, build a whole house, put the money up for the land, and you also only have 18 months, you have to pay taxes on them. So after a year, you're paying already, you're losing money in the taxes because you've got CO on the house and you're hoping to sell it and make a return. Now it's so great that you can buy a house cheaper than you can build one on the land, cheaper than you can buy the land. And you can just, you know, it's amazing, but you have to go through a lot of red tape. You have to get, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds. Tax liens are very difficult. Usually I don't even want to deal with them. Because what I do is I pay a retainer fee to an attorney.
Gotcha.
And this attorney is going to say, okay, you owe me $10,000 retainer. And you might not get the property. We're going to go to battle for you. I'm going to go sit in the courthouse. I'm going to get there before everybody. I'm going to have my coffee. And I'm going to get up in there. I'm going to talk to the judge. I'm going to see what shows up on the ticket today on the docket. And we're going to go look at and get aggressive after these houses. Also, you have to either be pre-approved or you have to have cash in hand. You have to pay for it right then and there. Because when the auction comes in, It's an absolute auction, meaning it's going to sell today, whether it's $2 or $2 million. So you're getting, and you know, and I used to bid against guys in the room before my TV show, like maybe 4 or 5 guys. Mm-hmm. Now I'm bidding against like 30 guys. So it's like, where did you guys come from, man? And they're like, right. Thanks for the tip, Vanilla. I'm like, come on, man, get out of here. You're causing problems, man. But
see, you really know what you're talking about here. I mean, obviously, you're very, very smart about this. Now, when you said you got into this, did you have some aptitude for real estate and for renovations, or was it just something you said, I would like to do this?
No, I kind of, it evolved. Mm-hmm. I started off small. I actually, the decorative side, I did a house on Star Island. I lived on Star Island for 12 years, and I had it decorated by these professionals, and I paid them a lot of money. I came in there and I had it decorated like I was only, I think, 21 at the time. And it was like Art Deco, right? Like I had green rooms, red rooms, yellow rooms. And when you walk in the door, it's a big ass house, you know? So you're like, wow, you know, it's cool. Like as a bachelor. You know?
Yeah.
Big, huge bachelor pad. But I went on tour and I'd come back to this house and I was like, you know, my friends were impressed that they see it for the first time. But if you live there, like living in it, you know, there was like, I don't know, 14 bedrooms, and I'm single. I was lonely and miserable, and I couldn't figure out why. I spent all this money. I'm thinking I'm living the American dream. I got a big house and nice cars. Why am I miserable? This doesn't work out.
Yeah.
It's not the reality side of the dream is not working. And so I would go stay with my mom and, like, smell the cooking when I come in.
Right.
And
the laundry.
Just get out of there. It's all messed up and, you know. So I was like, what's wrong with this house? And I felt guilty because I paid so much money for the decorators. Mm-hmm. So I actually went in there and I flipped through a bunch of magazines and I go, that's what my house should look like. And I learned about earth tone colors and throw pillows and fireplaces and cozy, you know, everything to warm it up. And it's funny because, you know, I never thought in a million years I'd say that, but I just kind of, absorbed some of the stuff I was seeing. And I could see the picture of how I wanted my house to be. And instead of paying these decorators millions of dollars to come in and just tear out what I've already spent money on and redo it, I did it myself. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with it. It took me a year, But I just kept looking at, you know, different design pages and different things in magazines and Googling and everything. And I just I did it myself. And I warmed it up. I made it feel like a warm, cozy house. But at the end of it, that's where I got the bug. I sit back. I cross my arms. People would come in and they would be like, wow, this is nice. You did good. I mean, I had before it was really I was living in a nightclub. So I'd come home from tour and I felt like I'm living in a big shopping mall or a nightclub. Mm-hmm. It was so cold. It was just like that hospital feel. You can't wait to get out of here.
Yeah.
I mean, I had one red room. I remember it was a TV room. Everything was red in there. And it was a decorative Art Deco red room. So the couch, the carpet, the ceiling, the walls, everything was red. And when you walk out of that room, it's true what colors do to you. I walk out and I'm like, ah, I just felt relieved that I got out of that room. It's like, God, I just couldn't stand no more red.
Right.
But I warmed it up, and that's where I got the kind of the decorative design, you know.
Well, you know what you're saying? A couple of things. First of all, a lot of people don't realize, and I've been through this before, how lonely it can be when you're, like, you know, on top, or when you have some celebrity or some fame or some status. People think, oh, it's the best. You just go out and you're partying and hanging out. But a lot of times it's not that way, because when you come back from the tour, finish the show, and you go back in your room and you haven't really known to talk to, it's pretty lonely, man. You know, I can understand what you're saying from that.
Yeah. It's hard to get a violin, though.
Well, I'm not asking for the sympathy. I'm just saying, unless you've been there, it's hard to explain. But I understand what you're talking about.
People, they'll never understand that. You can explain it, and they'll get fascinated by it. Yeah. But until you walk in the shoes and you've had a little taste of fame, like, fame is not a great thing. It doesn't do anything. I mean, your ego, like, I lost my ego a long time ago. It don't even matter.
Right.
Because what it is I look at it like it's an artificial life. You have all these screaming fans out there. You're living this artificial life that you, in turn, think that you've at first you think it's like you're living the dream. You've got it. You've accomplished everything, and you're just, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
But the dream is never as good. I mean, the reality is never as good as the dream. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you're living this artificial life. And for me, since I did Ice Ice Baby at 16 years old.
At 16?
Yeah, I wrote it at 16. It hit when I was 19. I did the Stop the Violence tour with Stetsasonic, EPMD, Sir Mix-a-Lot, and I was like the opening act for the opening act for the opening act for the opening act for the opener. And it was the coolest thing at that age, you know. And I remember Ice-T, he told Chuck D from Public Enemy, he says, this white boy can dance. You got to see this. And it kind of got me up. Instead of being the opener, I got two slots up.
Yeah. The opening for the opener of the opener.
But just kind of worked my way up the ladder, man. And it's amazing how things play out. But, yeah, there's an artificial life there that it just, you know, once the snow globe, it's like a snow globe. It's all shaken up. Mm-hmm. And you know this. I can talk to you because you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And the snow globe is all shaken up, and you have this exaggerated sense of reality. And you have to wait for that snow globe to settle before you find out your purpose and your meaning in life. And at that point, that's where everybody's watching, like Justin Bieber. You know, he's lived such an artificial life up until this point. Now everybody's loving and more tuned in with the self-destruction than they are or care about any kind of new record he's coming out with, mm-hmm. or not. They want to see where, you know, they want to see him crash another Lamborghini or do some drugs and drive off to a volcano or something.
Right.
So, you know, that's what goes on. People are tuned in to see how they're going to self-destruct.
Mm-hmm.
And 90% of them self-destruct. I'm lucky. And I did have a weekend that lasted a few years. Believe me, I self-destructed. But I'm the kind of guy that I'm a motocross racer. I raced motocross since I was 8 years old. So I know that nobody else on the track is going to help me get in front of that guy. I'm going to have to push it myself. So I dig down deep. I get the dirt off my shoulder. And I pick myself up, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of self-discipline and a lot of drive. And I said, I'm going to use every bit of that drive in whatever I'm going to do in the rest of my life. I used it to make music. I used it to do what I've done here. And how can I go on and find another purpose and a meaning? And it's funny because it wasn't career-driven. It wasn't money-driven. It was family-driven, and I found it. I've been married 20 years. I got two kids, man, and that's my meaning and my purpose in life.
Wow.
And that's the greatest thing, and we can all accomplish that without the fame,
mm-hmm.
and without a job or whatever. I mean, you're going to need a job, trust me, but I'm just saying, without having, you know, millions and all mm-hmm. that. And it's the greatest thing on earth, and it's so simple that people complicate it and think that there's more to it than there is.
Exactly.
I'm here with Vanilla Ice, and we're going to get into the Ice Ice Baby phenomenon, one of the biggest songs of all time. We're talking about 90s pop culture as well, the fade haircut, the baggy pants, the running man, all the things that define the look and sound of that time. And you know what's going to define me, though? You know what's going to define the look of 2015? MeUndies. That's right. MeUndies. I want you to go to MeUndies.com because you might not be able to see it, but you'll know it. You'll still be talking about your MeUndies 20 years from now, and you'll probably still be wearing them because they're that good quality. I know I will. And not only because they're cool and comfortable, because they're made that well. What's not to love about skivvies that don't ride up on you? Don't shrink when you wash them. Always leaving you feeling cool and dry because they pull moisture away from your skin. That's MeUndies. They're also sexy. That's cool. It's a bonus. Have you seen the designs and colors? Check them out at MeUndies.com. And hey, ladies, MeUndies has a whole product line made especially for you. And MeUndies isn't just about the underwear. They make the softest, most comfortable hoodies, t-shirts, socks. Just ask Speewee. He loves the MeUndies hoodie I gave him. Won't take the damn thing off. He's got gravy stains all over him, but he loves it. You will love it too. If you order now at MeUndies.com/Jericho, I'm going to sweeten the deal for you. I'll give you 20% off your first order and free shipping as well. Come on. What more do you need? 20% off and free shipping. You got to jump all over that, just like the ladies will jump on you when you're wearing MeUndies, if you know what I mean, to get some of that. Hey, buddy, do, buddy. Hey, buddy, do, buddy. Hey, buddy, do, 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 do. I said stop. Collaborate, hippie dibbity. All right, you can buy a whole pack of them and save even more money. MeUndies.com/Jericho. They come with a money-back guarantee. You got nothing to lose and everything to gain, so go to MeUndies.com/Jericho. Save 20% off your order and feel like a sexy beast. Getting back to Vanilla Ice. Now, you've done a great job. You know, you talk about Vanilla Ice experience. It's one of many, many things that you do. You stayed, you know, you stayed, I guess, not in the public eye, but you stayed with your in show business for 25 years. Like you said, you mentioned when we talk about, you know, who was around when To the Extreme was big, if you're talking about other acts, you know, PM Don or Killing Me Bad or, you know, guys like the Third Base or these type of guys. Yep. Those guys don't have their own show on TV and haven't been doing stuff regularly. Right. I don't think I can remember a time when you haven't been, you know, maybe in the mid-90s for a little bit, but whatever. But since about 97, 98, you know, Ice is doing this and he's doing that. And now he's got this going on. And, you know, it's amazing to me. I always love seeing guys that can reinvent themselves in this world and broaden the brand of Vanilla Ice is almost as big as the rapper Vanilla Ice at this point.
It's amazing. I didn't plan it. It's not planned, and I didn't really ever in my brain think, you know what, reinvent. Mm-hmm. That word never really even came into my brain. I just, you know what, I'm a working man. When you smell me, I say, you smell that cologne? They're like, yeah. I say, you know what that is? What? That's the scent of a working man. I ain't afraid to work, man, and I like it because it's the adventure. Me, what drives me, I think, is more the adventure. I'm not motivated by the money. I'm not motivated by anything other than having a good time. I'm a very simple person, man. And people can look at me and kind of dissect it and break it down, and it seems complicated, you know, to them. But to me, I'm very simple. I wake up the same way everybody wakes up. It's just what I do during the day that makes the difference.
Right.
And I just like to get up early with a cup of coffee, man, and get out and tackle life, you know. I don't do drugs. I don't even drink, man. I don't do nothing. I like to work. Mm-hmm. And I work so much that, you know, it's fun for me. So it's more about the adventure of working and the thrill of just having a job to go to and do something. And with these houses and everything that I do, it's like art, man. I get to come here and my friends that I've been working with, I've been with them 20 something years. They're all motocrossers.
Oh, your team?
My whole team.
Your renovation team?
Yeah, we don't have a punch clock. We show up. We challenge each other to see who can get here earliest.
That's cool.
Like, I was there earlier yesterday. We'll see who can be tomorrow. I mean, we're here before the freaking roosters are crowing. So it's fun to challenge each other and have ambition and drive and a purpose and a meaning.
Because like you said, it's art too. Like anytime you create something out of nothing, it's art. And that could be a painting. It could be a song. I always said like putting together a wrestling match, you're putting together something out of nothing. It's the same with what you're doing with the houses. You're creating something.
Yeah.
It's just as much of an art form as laying down some tracks for a record.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. I use the exact same philosophy. I use that same drive, that same ambition. The music is poetry, though, and I love poetry. I've always loved poetry, and it's also a diary, and it reflects who I am as a person inside, and I get to release a lot of demons and a lot of things that you wouldn't just really, that you would have to actually pay a therapist for you to sit down and listen to you know. It's not a pleasure cruise, and you have to, like when you have an author writing a book, you know, you hear these stories where they'll go and they'll hibernate. They'll get a house and they'll rent it up in the mountains, and they get to try to tap into that creative element to where they can actually write a genius book. Sometimes they get writer's cramp. We've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Writer's block.
Right, writer's block, whatever it is. And same thing happens with music with me. It's a diary, you know, and it's not a light switch you turn on and off. Yo, let me go make this record for some money. Let me go make this because, you know, let me make it 3.5 minutes for the record company for radio to play it. I don't let all these parameters come into play when I make my music. And I believe in just, you know, keeping an open mind about everything. Mm-hmm. So I have to be in the mood. I have to capture that mood and that time. It doesn't just come. It comes and goes. And when it's there, you have to hit it. But you can't just go, let me go block out the next 3 months and put it on my schedule. I'm going in the studio and I'm going to make a record and yada, yada, yada. It don't just work that way, you know. And with the houses, I use a lot of that same, you know, signature that I have with the music. I kind of, you know, it reflects everything that I am with the houses, my theme. I have almost like my own theme now. And I didn't recognize it until I started doing about 10 of them. And I look back and go, wow, they all kind of have a similar touch to them.
Okay, right.
You know? And I never even thought about that because I try to make them different. You know, I try to do different things, but I can see my little signature touch
everywhere.
It makes
sense, though. Yeah, it's going to have a little bit of a vibe that it's a Vanilla Ice original.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
It's funny, but, you know, I never really compared the two, the music with the construction and the design. And now that I sit back and kind of reflect on it, I'm like, yeah, I can see it. I can see it now. But sometimes you're just, you know, oblivious to a lot of things, and you just keep driving forward, and you never think back.
So you look at your body of work.
Yeah.
See it all, yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you've always been into poetry. Yeah. Is that what kind of attracted you to rap music? Because it very 100%. Much is speaking poetry over 100%. Beats, right?
100%. Yeah. Love poetry since Edgar Allan Poe, man. Just, you know, if anything I picked up from high school was Woodshop.
There you go.
And poetry. And I was always bored with reading and everything, but when for some reason, like I wasn't really big into the stories and reading books and all that. I'd rather go to the quick way and just watch a movie and get the story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm that guy. But when it came to poetry, I would sit down and read poetry. I just loved it, and I always tried to put myself in the person who wrote the poetry, because it's almost like a riddle, some of them, and you have to think about what were they thinking when they wrote this, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the cool part is, how did they put that in a rhyme? That's awesome. You know?
Yeah.
So it was a challenge, and I always love a challenge. Everything in life, I'm very challenge driven. So if there's a challenge there, I'm like, oh, let's figure out a way how to do that. You know, let's dissect it and break it down and see if we can meet the challenge.
Because if you're talking about when you're 16, that's probably, I don't know, probably 85, 86, something like that. So rap was pretty much in its infancy and mostly a black oriented, you know, form of art. I mean, the Beasties were probably happening at that point, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, but to be a white guy to go into rap was almost like, what?
Oh yeah.
Like, it's so weird. Oh, yeah. Now it's not a big deal now, but then it was kind of a like, hey man, this is our thing, right?
Well, I didn't even have enough money when I made my first record to even take a photo, like do a photo session or anything. So the record, the label was just the whole, you know, jacket of the album was just black. I had an investment. I couldn't even make a video. Nobody even knew. I think my record was number one already before anybody knew what color
like,
I was.
Like across the country?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was number one, and then they found out, you know, what color I was, because I had three investors come up with $5,000 to make the Ice Ice Baby video. Is the cheapest video that made more money than any. Yeah.
Wow.
And this is, you know, this is, they were making videos for millions and millions of dollars. You remember that?
Absolutely.
So
records too. You'd be sitting in the studio for years to make those records. Yeah.
So, and it went number one, and then finally people figured out, but, you know, it was the music that started it off. Ice Ice Baby.
Yeah.
It was actually the B side of the record. Play That Funky Music was the A side.
Really?
Yeah. And some guy, Dave Morales, I remember his name, the DJ, flipped the record over, and
which city was it?
It was like Georgia.
Okay, in Georgia.
In Georgia. And he flipped this thing over, and it just went nuts, and it just kind of caught on like wildfire. And then I had enough money to you know, do a few things. And
but it's amazing how that used to be. Like you said, like a DJ flipped it over and played the wrong song. You hear that all the time. Like I think you hear that with Kiss and Beth. It was the B-side or something, and someone played the B-side by mistake, and suddenly people are calling in, and suddenly it goes, that doesn't work that way anymore. You could never have that.
There's no A or B-side, is it?
No, or there's no DJ who's just going to play it and get it going.
Or you know DJ that just does it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Times have changed, man.
You know? But that song is so timeless, Ice Ice Baby. It's funny because I was watching the video last night with my daughters. I told you I have 2 8-year-old daughters, twins. Yeah. And they said, make sure you tell Vanilla Ice tomorrow when you see him that we like Ice Ice Baby. You know? So you're talking from 8 into, like, you know, however, 48, 58. Like, people, that's a catchy freaking song. It's a classic
it
now
is,
at
man.
This point in time,
I'm
man.
I'm honored, bro.
You know? Isn't it amazing?
It is. It's been a journey, too. I'd never imagined it or thought about it. And, you know, we can't pick our fans. They pick us, as you know.
Yeah.
And I never thought, you know, because I play shows now. I play concerts all the time.
Right.
I just played Boca and sold out at the amphitheater. I played North Dakota. I go all over the place.
I see you're going to the UK in a week or so.
Yeah, heading to the UK next week. Right. And, you know, my fan base now is really strange because it's 16 to, like, 28. And if you do the math, most of them weren't even born, or they were one or two. And it's amazing. I guess that, you know, and there are the few soccer moms in the back and the people, you know, that grew up to it, and they'll come out too, you know, on the weekend. But I guess, you know, it's an amazing thing that you can capture a different demographic that you ever predicted, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is, you know, the music, YouTube, the TV show helps. I mean, a lot of this stuff helps, but they still have to gravitate towards the music and like it or not like it. Mm-hmm. And that's the cool part, is that song is timeless.
It really is, yeah.
And the ninja rap. The Ninja Turtles is another thing that helped me cross over every generation and going to continue
go
forever.
Go ninja, go, right? But, you know, I think that's the first rap song. I mean, if you're not talking about Beastie Boys stuff, that because I remember the early 90s, there was, before gangsta rap really took over, there was like, I don't know if you want to call it fun rap, but it was like a good time feel between you and Hammer, and you mentioned Young and C and Tone Loc. There were really cool rap songs that you could listen to, and it was Fresh Prince. It was fun.
It's magical.
Yeah,
and
you know?
That's the whole great thing, that people want to come back to that, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of the music today, you know, they call the 90s the last great generation, and they call everything since then from 2000, we're in 2015. We're already past a whole other, you know, decade there. And nobody even recognizes anything. There's no music that defines it.
Right.
You know, there's nothing, no fashion that designs it, that defines it. And they call it the lost generation. Because in 100 years from now, you can't look back at 2000 to 2015 and say, what was that about? What defined it? There's really nothing. They call it lost because it's going to be lost in translation 100 years down the line.
That's true.
They're going to focus on, well, we know the 90s had Vanilla Ice, Kurt Cobain. They had Z Cavricci pants, shaved eyebrows.
Fade haircuts.
Faded haircuts. The Running Man.
Yeah.
Baggy pants. I mean, there's so much, you know, pop culture and music that happened in the 90s. There's nothing that really has happened since. There's big acts and there's things that come and go, but that's the thing, is because of all, I guess, the computer. The computer has a lot to do with that. Yeah. It's become saturated now. So, you know, you have one hit here or one hit there, and then you're kind of forgotten, you know?
Right.
And the thing is that the 90s was the last time, you know, that actually will be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that there's something they're going to change about that, because, you know, a lot of people now are wearing like what we wore in the 80s. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
All those colors are back.
Yeah.
I was tripping out because I thought that was like the most uncool thing. I was like so embarrassed of how I dressed and how, you know, back in the day with all those colors, I look back at it and I'm like, it's like your grandma pulling out, showing all your friends those old photos of your.
Well, you know what's funny is that I lived with a dude in about 1990, and he had the Vanilla Ice kind of hair.
Yeah.
And I was the rock guy with long hair. And it was like, you know, I hate rap, I hate metal, I hate rap, but you can meet in the middle with Ice Ice Baby because of the energy of the dance. Hammer too. Hammer was another one. Just watching, it was fun.
Yeah.
But Ice Ice Baby also too, with the Queen riff. It was like, well, I know that riff.
Had a little rock and roll.
Yeah,
in
a little
there.
Rock and roll in there too, you know. I heard that the Beastie Boys, when they did Paul's Boutique with all the sampling that was in it, was like the last, or maybe right before that, was the first time you actually had to start paying for samples.
Right.
Like Tone Loc Wild Thing, that Jamie's Crying from Van Halen, didn't have to pay for the sample.
Nope.
Did you have to pay for that sample?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But I didn't clear it up front because I couldn't predict that I was going to sell 160 million records.
You didn't know, right?
And if you don't sell a lot of records, even though, like, here's a good example. Even Run DMC, mm-hmm. LL Cool J, there were some big acts that sampled way before I came along. Sampling has always been a part of hip hop. I mean, you know, Puffy does it still.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, they'll still do it. You'll still hear it out there. And you can't predict you're going to sell that many records, so you just throw it out there because you don't have enough money to clear it up front anyway.
Yeah.
So you just throw it out there and see what it does, and mine took off. But the reason that nobody had really made a big issue as far as lawsuits and everything before my record is because nobody had ever sold anything more than a gold record, which is 500,000 units. And by the time
in rap music,
rap music just was not a gigantic seller. It was big. The names were big as far as like Among Us with Run DMC, LL Cool J. A few of us knew about that, right? But not Middle America. Middle America did not know anything about that yet until my record came out. And I kind of brought rap music to Middle America for the first time.
To the mainstream.
And sold and saw some really significant sales. I mean, platinum after platinum. My record was selling 1 million a week.
That's insane when you think about that, right?
Oh, I still look back and go, wow, you know, how, you know, but it's a sign of the times and it's amazing. And I, you know, I got many stories to tell you about the adventure along the way, but you know, being that there's no real lawsuit to go after any money if it's just a gold record, because by the time they recoup their advance and all that, you know, there's nothing in the pot.
Yeah.
But when you're selling a lot of records, so they figured, oh, well, hey, there's some money here. You know, attorneys are not, you know, dumb. They see money and they're going to come after it in some way. So they did. And then it's funny because a building in downtown New York, Avenue of Americas, pops up, an entire building called Sample Clearances.
Really?
Right after my record. So, and I helped fund that.
But, so you would go to this building and get your clearance for any sample that you wanted to use on a song.
Yeah. So I got lost. I got a lawsuit against me from Queen and David Bowie. And of course they have lawyers saying, hey, you know, this white kid, he's a rapper. He's in America, you know, and he's selling lots of records, lots and lots of them. So there's some money there. What do you think? Hey, we don't care, mate. Let's go get paid, you know, whatever. So I had a lawsuit. And I worked out really well for me because I ended up buying all the royalties, and I learned about royalties. I learned about publishing. I ended up buying all my own publishing back. Mm-hmm. I bought the David Bowie and Queen Under Pressure. It was a combination with the two of those. So it was Freddie Mercury and David Bowie. And I ended up buying that publishing.
It was available to buy?
Yes, so $4 million. So, because there was nobody that, because Freddie Mercury had already died.
Yeah.
Brian May wasn't getting much, and David Bowie wasn't. It was, you know, Mercury's family, but Brian May had rights to sign it off. Brian May comes out. He's a huge fan of the song. He comes out still to this day, comes to the concerts.
That's great.
And
he would get it. He's a pretty modern thinker.
He loves it. He's great. You know, he just likes music and has fun with life, man. And anyway, so yeah.
So you actually own Under Pressure.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty interesting.
I bought a lot of publishing, and I learned about that. You know, a lot of people still don't understand it that do music. You know,
mm-hmm.
And you can buy publishing. That's why Michael Jackson bought the Beatles.
That's right.
And remember, Paul McCartney was really mad at him, and they did this song together, "Ebony and Ivory,"
mm-hmm.
And then they hated each other after that because Michael Jackson. It's not right that you come in here and buy our music. This is our music. You cannot buy it. We want it. And Paul McCartney.
Michael.
They were bidding against each other, and Michael ended up outbidding Paul McCartney.
Because McCartney said to Michael, Michael was asking him, how can I, you know, what's a good investment? He said, publishing.
Yep.
So Michael went and found that the Beatles were available and bought the Beatles songs. He's like, I didn't mean my publishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He still owns it.
he still owns it,
which is incredible.
Yeah.
And he owns that. So Michael was a very smart guy. And so I learned about that, and that helped me, you know, make a lot of more, you know, the checks got a lot bigger. Instead of just, you know, coming in, which I thought were big in anyway, but now instead of the record company taking their split and all this other stuff, you know, it comes in as a bigger check to yourself. Most people don't have the means to do that because you have to pay for it.
You got to pay a lot to start making it.
And every 7 years it'll pop up to where, you know, they'll give you an advance towards it, the record company, and they'll take, you know, 80% of the cut or 90%, and they'll give you, you know, 10, 15, 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have a choice to say, oh, because they'll give you an advance. They'll say, hey, here's $500,000 or $1 million, you know. We'll give you an, and everybody's like, oh, 7 years gone by. I've already spent most of my money. I get $1 million. All I do is sign here. Sign, done. And all you're doing is giving the record company the rights to sell your music. But if you have the means and you can buy that, you know, you're going to end up making the money from it. So licensing agreements are big these days. Mm-hmm. Spotify, that's how you sell records these days. It's not like, hey, right. I got 1 million records sold. It's licensing agreements. And you can sell a few on iTunes and different things like that and avenues, but it's more about, you know, licensing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you license all that out and the checks come to you instead of the record company. And I took that money and I put it into real estate. And that's what led to where I'm at now. And I started off doing small homes, medium-sized homes, you know, and then to the big mansions I'm doing now.
And now you have a show with five seasons doing this, yeah. Yep. Do you own the publishing for Ice Ice Baby?
Yep.
Okay, so that's yours too?
I put a catalog together. I have six full albums I released.
Oh, yeah.
And they're on one is on BMG Records, one's on Capital EMI, one's on SBK, one's on Universal. And unless I can work out an agreement between all three of them or buy all the publishing, I can't put a full catalog together someday.
Yeah, you so can't I do a greatest hits record.
Right.
Yeah.
So now I bought all the publishing. Now I can do what I want with it, and I have creative control over it. So it's kind of fun.
Is this why I remember on the Behind the Music, you had the classic line, or theirs goes, din-din-din-digga-danda.
Oh, yeah.
Ours goes, din-din-din-digga-danda. It's not the same thing. And you say it with such a shit-eating grin on your face. It's like he knows he's totally taking the piss, right? But legally, you couldn't admit it, right?
It was totally legal, man. I was right in the middle of the lawsuit at that time, and I was like, you really want me to admit it? I mean, it's obvious to everybody, but you know what? No, mine's different. There's that little ding ding, okay? Yeah. That ding 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 digga ding ding, not ding 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 digga ding ding.
Classic, right? Having a great conversation with Vanilla Ice. You mentioned Michael Jackson, and that's where I want to pick things up after I talk about another guy making his mark in the mainstream, Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. It's an incredible fitness program that's becoming a way of life for thousands and thousands of people. I don't just mean pro wrestlers or athletes or musicians. I mean everybody. Everybody. You know I do DDP Yoga. You know a lot of my friends do DDP Yoga, and everyone's doing it because it's so much more than a workout program. It's life-changing, life-saving even, definitely career-saving. I started back in the WWE last week. My first match in Springfield, Illinois, I took my very first bump and felt something go out of whack. Leg went numb, did a couple stretches in the ring during the match. I'm very good, very stealth. I can do that while I'm working. Then I went to the next town and did DDP Yoga the next day and felt great. I took the exact same bump the next night just to prove to myself that the DDP Yoga program worked once again, and it did. And it really works, man. That's why DDP, he designed this DDP Yoga to work for anyone and everyone, no matter what your age or your fitness level. Great option for those of you trying to get in shape and live a healthier life. Also great choice if you're already in shape and trying to maintain. DDP makes it easy. He's got it all covered, especially if you get the Max Pack. You get all the workouts on the DVD. You get a grid chart to track your progress. You get a poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga. You get recipes, so you get the healthy eating plan. You get all the workouts on MP3, so you exercise on the go. You do DDP Yoga wherever you want, whenever you want, wherever you are, wherever you are. I'm going to say it twice. It's so damn nice. That's what I do. Do it in my hotel rooms when I'm on the road. Do it on the back of the Fozzy tour bus. Do it in the dressing rooms at WWE live events. You go at your own pace, all right? DDP is beginner workouts, intermediate, advanced. You do it your way. It's your workout. You start where you're comfortable and move up when you're ready, okay? I want you to give this a try. DDPyoga.com/Jericho and take advantage of the special offer only available to the Sexy Beast listeners of Talk is Jericho. That's DDPyoga.com/Jericho. But guess what? Offer not going to last forever. I want you to go to DDPyoga.com/Jericho and take advantage of it now. Once again, DDPyoga.com/Jericho. We want you to get in the best shape of your life, and DDP Yoga is going to help you get started. All right, so sitting here with Vanilla Ice, and you mentioned Michael Jackson, and so you're talking like 90, 91 when you were one of the biggest stars on the planet. Did you ever have any interactions with Michael?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
Been to his house, good friends with him, great guy, love him to death, man.
He got what you were doing and was into it? Yeah.
Totally, man. He invited me out, brought my kids, my wife, my family, everybody's been out to the house. We did all the rides at Neverland. We took a train ride with him. He took us in his house, showed us all around, and he's amazing, you know.
That's cool, man.
That guy, I know the whole family. They're great. I'm still in touch with them, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah, man. They're great. Joe, actually, the dad. Mm-hmm. He comes and eats dinner with me when I go to Vegas and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, great people, man. Janet's great. All of them, all the Jacksons. I even know the nieces, the nephews, you know, and they're great.
Everybody.
Oh, yeah. They invite me to different functions and things. And
it's amazing, though. I'm sure when you first started doing what you were doing, you got a lot of kickback from people, like, who's this white boy type thing. Then suddenly you make it and show that you actually are doing some good work. And then now everybody jumps behind it, and it's like you're like an OG now at this point, like vanilla. You know what I mean, right?
Like, hey, take it, man. Listen, I've been through hell and back, and you know whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, mm-hmm. as you know. And we always have to have a purpose and a meaning. So I'm just happy to be here, man, and have my family and my kids, and have fun with life, man. You know, mm-hmm. I believe that smiles are contagious. I try to wake up with one, and I go to sleep with one. And anything that really stresses you out, you know. I try my best not to let it get to me anymore, mm-hmm. you know, because it's gotten to me in the past, and I just look back and I try to better myself every day. You know, I'm thinking, I'm going to die one day. Really? Is it worth it? Because I talked to this old man. I learned a lot from old people. I talked to this friend of mine. He's the 12th ninja. We have a code of ninjas.
He's the 12th ninja?
He's the 12th ninja. He's 85 years old. His name is Lou. And he's in a wheelchair. He had a but he's his mind, everything is intact, and he is sharp as he could ever be. And I said, Lou, if there's anything you could tell me, man, any advice, what would it be? He goes, first, you got to slow the F down. I said, okay. I'm like, Lou, I like it, man. I get my caffeine and some Red Bull and some Monster. I'm going at it, you know. He's like, yeah, but you got to, life is going to pass you by before you know it. I said, okay. So what else, Lou? He goes, listen, whatever you stress about in life, whatever it is, I don't care if it's a relationship, a job, your mortgage, whatever's going on in your life, don't even let it get to you. I said, oh, that's easier said than done, you know. He goes, yeah, but listen, no matter what happens, you're going to be right here where I'm at in the end anyway. Hmm. So you go from point A to B, and you can either have an option to stress out and get paranoid or do whatever through your life and your days, or you can just let it go. Hmm. He goes, because no matter what, you're still going to be here where I'm at. He goes, just enjoy life. Make it an adventure. And when he told me that, it kind of sunk in a little bit, you know. And Tammy Faye, I did the Surreal Life with her. You
right.
never know where like, you know, your therapy's going to come from. She told me, she says, you know, because I hated my old self for a while. I had a problem with it, you know. I wanted to move past it.
You hated the fact that you were Ice Baby guy?
Yeah. I didn't like the image. I didn't like, you know, I was embarrassed by the way I wore those clothes and everything. And I love it now, you know, for sure. But she told me some therapy to help me get over it. She said, you are who you are because of who you were. Hmm. These short phrases, by the way, they work and sink in with me way better than a long, therapeutical, expensive conversation.
So you are who you are because of who you were.
Right. Hmm. So embrace it, you know.
And she seemed like a really cool chick on that show.
She's cool.
I watched that show.
Smart. She's not with us anymore, but she was a sweetheart, man. Mm-hmm. And she was just the best. And I loved meeting her. And even Eric Estrada, he was the coolest, you know. And they would give me advice, man. And these people have been there and seen things, you know, that most people wouldn't be able to give a celebrity advice. Like, you can't go to a regular therapist that's down the street from your house that's used to dealing with regular average people, 9 to 5 and stuff like that. And then you expect them to have an understanding of how your life is as a famous celebrity.
Well, it's like we spoke earlier. It's like to understand what it's like to be lonely after a show.
Yeah.
Like, you know, normal, I say normal as in people who don't understand that. You know, you could work at a gas station, and unless you also work at a gas station, we're not going to understand what you're talking about.
Exactly.
You have to be in that position, right?
You have to be in that position to have to give somebody advice. So, anyway.
Did you do that show, Surreal Life? Like, did you do it kind of like, all right, I'll do it. Were you excited about it? Because it seemed like you took a bunch of, you know, I guess the word would be former celebs or B celebs or whatever the word would be, and put them all in a house together to hope for some kind of drama. Like, I was a big fan of the show. I watched every season.
It's amazing. It was almost 15 years ago, that
crazy,
show.
Right? Is it that long ago?
Yeah, jeez, bro. It was in the mid-90s, right?
Like yeah.
Late 90s.
Yeah.
But yeah. That show was amazing, and I didn't want to do it at first. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I made a lot of, you know, in my contract, I said, listen, I don't want to do this. And they raised the money. I said, it's not about the money. You don't get it. It's not going to motivate me, the money. I've always had money. I've never made bad investments. I didn't end up like Hammer. Mm. So get over the fact that you think you're going to buy me. It's not going to happen. So they were trying to, they were begging me to come on this show. And I was like, listen, it was Chris. I was like, no, man, I don't want to do it.
Chris, the producer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And And he says, listen, what can we do to make it? I says, well, you cannot harp on my past because I have a problem with it. I had a big, you know, internal problem with who I was and everything. And because, you know, it almost killed me. And that's that weekend that lasted a few years. And they caught me during that weekend where I didn't have a purpose or meaning. I didn't know who I was in life, really. You know, that snow globe was kind of settling still, and I was just kind of still shaking up.
And you were the former guy. It's like, oh, weren't you Vanilla Ice?
Yeah.
It's like, I still am.
It's a bad time for me to, you know, come on this show because you're going to see a bad side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a hard time dealing with everything, coming out of the artificial life and jumping into a real life because there really is a human in here. So I told him, I said, okay, I'll come on the show, but you can't harp on the past and all these different things. And they said, okay. So I go on there, and I had no idea it was going to be so great, but one of the things that kind of put me over the hurdle was they said that, you know, you get to live with Ron Jeremy in the house. And I said, sold! I'm going to go live with the legend, man. Ron Jeremy, come on. But who gets a chance to do that, you know?
Right.
So I was fans of a lot of people on the show anyway, and I'm like, ah, this is whatever. Let's just get in where we fit in and see what happens. And I learned so much from it. It was a great experience, a great TV show. But, you know, I got therapy from it, and I never thought I'd get that, you know, because these people have walked it, and you get to live in this house with them, you know, with no script, really. And, you know, some of the stuff is staged, but not all of it, you know. And you get to really talk with these people and interact because you don't get a TV. You don't get your cell phone. You have to sit in there for months, you know, and you have to figure it out.
Nothing to do but talk.
Talk.
Human connection.
Hello. Yeah. Talk. Yeah. One of these things, these lost arts. But it was magical, and it worked out really well for me, and it helped me get over some of those hurdles and different things. And
like you said,
I didn't even want to sing Ice Ice Baby ever again in my life. And now I love it, you know? It's like...
Isn't it amazing how everyone goes through that? You think of, like, McCartney in the 70s when he started Wings. He didn't play any Beatles songs. And people were like, you got to play, because that's... I'm not a Beatle anymore. Or, like, Kiss in the 80s when they took their makeup off. They didn't want to play makeup songs. They just, I don't want to do... And then you look back, like you said, I don't want to sing Ice Ice Baby. But it's like you had this one in a trillion, huge, huge, multi-generational classic tune.
Yep.
And for a while, you're like, you didn't want to do it.
No.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, I hated myself. It was really strange how that can happen because you have such success. And I just didn't view myself, I guess, like everybody else did. Or maybe I did. Maybe I was just kind of over it. Maybe it was just too big and it had to implode. And that's kind of what it did. And I kind of self-destructed a little bit. But I got myself back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of that. I picked myself up, dusted my dirt off my shoulder, and I said, let's go to work. Come on. We got to figure out something.
Yeah.
But what helped me get over everything was having that family.
Mm-hmm.
I figured out now I have a meaning. Now I have a purpose in life. And you know it as well.
Yeah. Because
you have a family and the kids. And there's nothing greater on earth than having kids, man. And you look at them in the eye and you know that you made that. And you're going to raise them. And that's the greatest feeling. Everything else is just kind of artificial.
Yeah.
And once you figure that out, man, you just have fun with everything.
Right.
You don't give a damn. You tackle it with a smile, man. You know? I mean, I remember I had haters back in the day even, you know, and I'm like, what is haters? What did I really do? Did I kill somebody? Well, I make music.
Yeah.
Really? What if they're a hater, dude? Listen, if you want to hate somebody, hate, you know, Muhammad Atta for flying that airplane into the buildings. Or
right.
Hate, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer or Timothy McVeigh or something. But I make music, man. What is it really? You know,
That's right.
I didn't understand all that because I was green, you know.
But you also have a real, like you said, you found yourself, but you also have, and what you have to do in show business is not be afraid to have that little bit of self-effacing humor. You take the piss out of yourself.
Totally.
And when I saw That's My Boy, which was, I had no idea you were even in it. I just went and saw it. I think I even texted you about it. I went and saw it one day, and I was like, and you were like the second lead.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
It was a great movie.
Like, did they send you a script and say, we got this idea, or did you know Adam Sandler, or how did that come about?
It was crazy because it was his wife that actually was a fan of the TV show, The Vanilla Ice Project, the construction show. So they watch it, him and her watch it, and they were watching it in bed one night, and she goes, hey, honey, as they were watching it, and he said, don't tell me. You think I should get, because he finished it, the sentence for Vanilla Ice in it. So I got a phone call. I was in England. I got a phone call. Said, Adam Sandler wants to meet you at Happy Madison. I got on a plane. Bam, I shot out there. I was tired. I didn't care. You know, 10 cups of coffee. I was like, I'm going to meet Sandler.
That's a big call. Yeah.
And so I get out there, and he goes, hey, my boy, how are you? I said, hey, I'm good, Adam. Nice to see you. You know, he's like, man, we're my wife. Big fan of your show, and we just want to see if you guys be interested in doing this this new movie we got coming up. And I said, let me think about it. Okay. And he goes, yeah, well, we're gonna have fun with it now. It's a little tricky with you. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, we're gonna have fun with who you were and how it was, and kind of like what you said, take the piss out of yourself, you know, where you just kind of crack on your own self and everything. And at that point, he caught me in like the best position of my life because I'm already cracking on my Z Cavrici pants and yeah. You know, shaving the eyebrow, you know, right, put some lines in the back of the hair, and running man and baggy, you know, all that. So, yeah, and he caught me at that time, and it was great, and he's exactly like you would think he would be. By the way, he's. Everything you see him in the movies, he's that way in real life. Like a lot of people are not. A lot of actors are not. You know, they're acting. This guy is exactly. He's funny on camera, off camera. It don't matter. He is just hilarious.
Seems like a dude that you want to hang out with.
He's a total cool dude you want to hang with all day, every day. Just always, always fun. So I was like, man, I really like this guy. I can get along with him. It's fun, you know. And that's what we did. We made the movie, and it just came out magical. It took on a life of its own. And during the process, I mean, we were backstage cracking up, and then, oh, it's time to go film. So we already had that good, there was tension at all. It was like, we're going out here and just start cracking up, man. And let's just make a show. And what if I fall over in the bushes and piss all over myself? How funny would that be? Okay, do it. He let me put a few things in there, you know? I'm like, really? You're letting me come up with stuff? This is cool. But yeah, and so we made the movie, and I never know how it was going to turn out or be edited or anything like that, and it was hilarious, man.
It was really funny. Yeah,
I loved the fact that, you know, I could come in there and make fun of my old self and just enjoy the whole thing, you know.
But also, you know, expand your notoriety. You know, people, I'm sure there's a lot of people that never heard of Vanilla Ice or didn't remember Vanilla Ice, didn't even know you were still alive. Is he still around? Yeah. And yet you come out of there looking like a star. It was great for you. You know,
I have guys showing up at my concerts. They make their own T-shirts now, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss me.
Yeah, whatever, go ahead.
But it says, you know, in one of the lines in the movie, because, you know, he's having sex with his sister. It was kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
So I said, word to your mother, brother fucker. And that line is like a catchphrase now. These guys make these T-shirts and they're showing up at the concerts. So word to your mother, brother fucker. I'm like, oh my God. Is that really taking off like that?
Are you doing anything more in that sort of world?
Yeah, I just filmed a movie with Sandler again.
Another one?
Yeah, I just finished a new one called The Ridiculous Six. So this movie is, I guess, going to be out somewhere in December.
Great.
But I play not Vanilla Ice in this one. Mm-hmm. I play Mark Twain in this one.
Why not?
Dude, I have a ridiculous mustache. It takes like 4 hours to put this whole wig on and this mustache and oh. And it is hilarious. It's got the entire Saturday Night Live cast. David Spade, he plays Colonel Custer.
Mm-hmm. Who does Adam Sandler play?
Adam plays he's an Indian. Okay. He's one of the Ridiculous Six, so he's an Indian. And let's see, David Spade. You got Rob Snyder in it. Rob mm-hmm. Snyder plays Don Diego. You have Lovett. John Lovitz. He plays this really wealthy billionaire guy, and let's see, there's so many.
So you've become like almost one of Sandler's cast, a gang of characters that he puts in a lot of his movies.
Hey,
I mean, that's great.
I love it, man. I'm honored to be a part of it. These guys are all fun, and I'm really good friends with them all. Spade came in town the other day. He called me up. He says, come have brunch with me. I was over here at the Breakers. I said, no problem, be right over, man. They have shrimp the size of lobster there, so I was like,
perfect, yeah.
I'm sold. But you know, it's cool to make friends with them all, and, mm-hmm. and they're just, you know, really good, decent, great
and
people.
Holding their own,
and
yeah.
They're fun to hang with, you know?
Yeah.
You're always laughing.
Yeah.
I love surrounding myself with people that are always having fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I never rate people by how much money they have or anything like that. I got a friend named Sal that he can't rub two nickels together. And I always, this is a kind of a life lesson for me of how, you know, you can be in life. And he's the happiest guy I know, man. He goes, oh, they came and picked up my truck today, man. I forgot, man, I missed a few payments. And, you know, I don't care. I got a new girlfriend. I'm going out tonight. And I moved back in with mom. You know, I'm 44 now. And
right.
It's great, bro. She does my laundry. I got food. It's everything is awesome. Loving life, man. It don't matter what's going on, you know.
He's happy.
Yeah, he's happy. Oh, I got a DUI last night, but I'm going out tonight, man, and everything's good. I'm going to get Uber.
I learned my lesson, man. It's great. I'm living life. He doesn't, you can't, he's always happy.
And then I live around some very wealthy people, right? Mm. And I see them, some of the people, and they're miserable. Mm. I don't get it. They got all the money in the world. They're driving these fancy cars, yachts, and everything you could ever dream of, and they're miserable. And I guess they have to work their whole life to pay for everything, and they just, I don't know, they can't enjoy anything. I don't know what it is. I
think it goes back to what the 12th Ninja said. Sometimes you got to just sit back and slow down and just smell the coffee,
smell
so to speak,
roses.
Right?
Yeah, smell the roses, brother. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's all a state of mind.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, everybody wants to be successful, but their definition of success doesn't really translate proper.
Right.
Because they all think that to be successful, you have to have money.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have, you know, fancy cars and boats and houses. Which is great things to strive for and great things to kind of motivate you to work and go to work and get things like that if that's what you want. But the real philosophy is if you're happy, you're successful.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
Not material things, right? Not anything else. If you're happy, you're successful, period. Mm-hmm. Take it from Cinderella Sal.
Couple last questions, man. We mentioned you're going to the UK and you just did a show in Boca. Do you still do quite a few shows throughout the year?
Yeah.
Full touring schedule?
Not so much a schedule because it takes 6.5 months to do the, you know,
sure.
Everything revolves around the TV show.
Yeah.
The project now is on season 5. We're getting ready to do season 6. And in the middle of it, I'll go out and do a show, like a mini series with the Amish or something like that. I did a couple seasons.
That's right. Vanilla Ice Goes Amish.
Vanilla Ice Goes Amish, and I get to go out and live with the Amish, and you know, you can't buy a ticket for that. So that's another adventure for me. It's a lot of fun. And
I love that, man. You've done all that stuff. You know, like whatever it is, the reality shows, you go and do them. You know,
it's incredible, man. I never know where life's going to go. I just, you know, I'll ride the wave.
Yeah.
It's like surfing. You don't know how to predict it.
You become a pop culture, you know, icon in a lot of ways.
You enjoy life, man.
Yeah.
Whatever it is and however it is, you just take whatever comes at you and you enjoy life, man. And I think that if you do enjoy it, it's going to translate to
sure.
the television screen, the movie screen, or in life in general, that they're going to gravitate towards that positive energy and just having a good time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if you can enjoy that, you'll surround yourself with good people and that'll kind of get the same vibe and you'll enjoy life, man. I mean, that's the whole thing is we go from point A to B, and if you're not having fun and you're miserable, it don't matter how much money you got, what kind of car you're driving or anything, you got to enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there is no purpose with it.
Right.
And that's it, man. I enjoy the heck out of myself. I'm at a good state in my life right now. And, you know, my teenage daughters are keeping me busy. But so I'm a rock star on the weekends, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm a working stiff Monday through Friday.
All right, last question. I want to know, how did you do your hair back in like 90, 91? How would you style like that? Because there's a little flip on top.
Dude, I would take my hair, I would get out of the shower, I'd turn upside down like that,
uh-huh.
and I had my head upside down, and I would take a bottle of gel and hairspray, the strongest, like spritz or whatever, and I would just hold my head upside down and let it stay there and spray it and glue it, and then stand up, and there it was.
Oh, man.
I
tell you what, man. It's been great talking to you today. I appreciate you. It's a lovely house, the Vanilla Ice Experience, man. Season 5, season 6, and you're a pretty pretty cool, inspirational guy.
Thanks, bro.
Thanks, dude.
Chris, I appreciate you letting me on the show, man, and it's an honor, and we'll do it again.
Absolutely, bro, man.
And all the best to you, brother.
Killer, man. We're shaking hands now. All right, everyone's talking about transparency these days. It's a word you hear a lot because people expect it. So when you're making a big purchase, like buying a new car, perchance, for example, don't you want and expect a transparent buying process? You don't want any secrets. You don't want any surprises. You want a process that gives you the confidence to know if you're getting a fair deal, right? To really understand the power of transparency, you need to check out TrueCar and the TrueCar's mobile app. With TrueCar, not only can you configure the car the way you want it and how you want it, but you can see what others actually paid for the same car you're looking for. And I'm talking about people who live in the same zip code, all right? You know what you can expect to pay for the car you want, right? That's transparent. Once you decide on the car you want, you lock in guaranteed savings. On average, check this out, over $3,000 off of MSRP. That's a lot of cash. And then you connected with a trusted TrueCar certified dealer that's going to honor your savings without negotiation. Really doesn't get any easier than that. I mean, how much more do you want? Think of the money you save. Lots. Think of the time and hassle you save. Lots. You're not wasting hours and hours at the car dealership. It's boring. The coffee's not good. You're haggling over the price of the car you want. You already know what you want. You don't need to haggle. You need to go to the True Car app and go buy your car from there. So when you're ready for a new transparent car buying experience, save time, save money, save us Y2J, and never overpay. Download the True Car app today. All right, thanks to Vanilla Ice. The season finale of the Vanilla Ice Project airs this Saturday, June 20th at 9 p.m. on the DIY Network. And wait till you see this house that he renovated. It is amazing. Like you heard him say, he's still out there touring. He's continually doing shows. Follow him on Twitter so you can see when he's going to be in a city near you. It's a great, great show. He's at Vanilla Ice. And since you know you've probably lost your old copy of To the Extreme, get yourself over to Amazon. Use the TIJ links to check it out and buy the new copy of To the Extreme, and also buy the new Tremonti album, Cauterize. Buy the new Black Veil Brides DVD, Alive and Burning. So many great things. Buy whatever you want. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the support or sponsors banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got links to Amazon UK, USA, and Canada. Doing your online shopping through my Amazon links, easiest way to support the show. No extra fees or hidden charges. We just get a couple bucks kickback to us to cover production costs. I want you to go to podcastone.com, click on Talk is Jericho. You find all my Amazon links right there. Come on down, help me out. And come on down and check me out as the Y2J WWE Summer Tour is officially underway. Had a great time last week with all the great Jerichoholics in Springfield, Illinois, Terre Haute, Indiana. Worked with Luke Harper. We tore the house down. A lot of people said it was their favorite match on the show, or one of the favorite matches on the show. So cool to hear that, and so cool to know that this weekend, June 20th, Las Vegas, Nevada, that'll be the beginning of the Intensity in 12 Cities, this crazy tour that I got coming up, starting in Las Vegas next Saturday. It's in the middle of the EDC Festival. I'm going to be rocking, man. I'm going to go nuts. Got a huge, huge taping for Talk is Jericho on June 21st with a secret guest. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed. Hopefully it works out. Then, of course, June 27th, Boston, 28th, Reading, Pennsylvania. Remember, July 2nd, I will not be in Singapore. Okay, if you bought tickets to see me in Singapore, I apologize. There was an issue with travel. I could not get from Tough Enough to Singapore in time, so I'm not going to be on the show. I will be in Tokyo, July 3rd versus Finn Balor, July 4th versus Neville, July 10th in Philly, July 11th in Pittsburgh. Got a lot of great shows coming up. I'm having a blast. I love wrestling. It's a lot of fun. But like I said, I won't be in Singapore because I'm hosting Tough Enough. That starts June 23rd, Tuesday on the USA Network. I'm not a mentor. I'm not a trainer. I'm a little bit of everything. Hosting the show, helping out. We were down at the Performance Center. We picked out the 13 final contestants for Tough Enough. And there's some good ones in. There's a couple of ringers. Actually, there's a lot of people down there, and I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of people hired that weren't even in the top 13, because there's that many quality people and quality athletes and a lot of potential down there. Also, speaking of quality, Fozzie live in Des Moines, Iowa, June 25th at the Bel Air Ballroom, June 26th at the Hard Rock Hotel in Sioux City, Iowa, July 24th at the Square in Kitchener, Ontario, August 8th, Festival of Friends in Hamilton, Ontario. August 9th, Heavy Montreal in Montreal. And, of course, October 30th, the Kiss Cruise. And then November 12th, we start the Cinderblock Party Tour, the next leg in Europe and the UK. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information, all VIP information. So much stuff to talk about. I appreciate you guys being here with me now. Thanks to Vanilla Ice, and thanks to Dusty Rhodes for being such a great influence on so many people. And thanks to all of you for supporting me, supporting my sponsors, including Koios, Nature Box, MeUndies, True Car, DDP Yoga, Amazon. That's it. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And we'll see you on Friday for my Tough Enough co-host. Yeah, Renee Young is going to be here, man. And she is a trip. She's hilarious. We're excited to have her on. I'll see you then. Yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
That's right, baby.
Stay tuned for the latest AP news headlines from Podcast One right after this.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge, Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire. California Governor Jerry Brown has signed a bill that will eventually raise the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour.
I'm extremely proud of the message that we're sending to working families by signing this bill.
Brown says the lowest paid workers deserve higher pay.
These people work day and night in thankless jobs that make our lives better. They keep our economy moving. And they keep our economy growing. We need to take care of them, just as they take care of us.
The new law adds 50 cents to the current $10 minimum next year. It increases to $11 in 2018 and $15 by 2022. University of California Irvine economics professor David Newmark estimates the boost could cost up to 10% of the low-skilled workers their jobs in the state. Some small business owners say it will have a devastating impact on them. AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
Five seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the 9th floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about 4 deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.